Welcome to Transient Wool Merchants. We're your hosts, Amy Manco and
Heather Bruner.
And this will be our very first episode. A little bit scary, but moving forward. Today's theme is origin story. Thought maybe you might like to know how we became the Transient Wool Merchants. Right now we're coming to you from sunny downtown Winchester, Virginia, where we've met up for our own little two-person knitting, spinning, and griping retreat. And so, Heather, why don't you get us started?
Well, I started knitting about 4 years ago. I decided I could not sit on the couch and watch the 2010 Winter Olympics for 2 weeks and not do anything else. So I went to my local yarn shop and took a class on learning to knit, and that was the end of that. I haven't looked back. So it started with knitting, and then I said I would never spin, and I took up spinning, and I said I would never weave, and then I started weaving. And after that, I thought, why not try my hand at dyeing? So I started dyeing roving and then yarn with Gershubi Fiber Arts, which is my yarn and fiber business. Gershubi comes from my dog's name, Schubert and Gershwin, because my day job is that I'm a piano teacher, and we must have musical dog names.
And they are the cutest dogs in the history of the world, next to my Tink and Foof, of course.
And what kind of dogs are Tink and Foof?
Well, Tink, best we can tell, is some sort of a Yorkie Chihuahua combo with a little bit of maybe teacup husky thrown in just to make her fairly psychotic, but yeah, crazy. And Foof is a peek-a-poo.
And the dogs have joined us here in Winchester, Virginia for this wonderful excursion. So Amy, how did you get into the transient wool merchant business?
Well, I have a farm that has been in my family 120 years. And it was my turn to take over the farm as my parents were getting older. And I started looking at how the farm operated and raising sheep, and realized that it was actually costing us money to have the wool removed because we just had a commercial flock of nondescript white sheep. And, you know, it was going to the county wool pool and not turning into anything beautiful, which, you know, I've always been crafty, and it kind of made me sad that my wool was just kind of going into a big bag and then taking a trip to God knows where. So, when it was my turn to take over the farm, I decided that I wanted to have wool sheep. So 20 years ago, I started raising Cheviots, which are not wool sheep, but I love dearly, and I didn't want to get rid of my Cheviots, but I wanted to find something interesting to start crossing with other things and making good wool. So I ended up contacting Elaine Shirley at the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation and getting my first Lester Long Wool ram, Mr. Jefferson. Everybody who knows me knows about Jeff. And from there, it kind of just spiraled out of control into, well, actually it is in control, but eight different breeds of heritage and rare breed sheep, an association with the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and a commitment to trying to preserve rare breeds. And that's how we kind of developed our business and our catchphrase, which is preserving rare breeds one skein at a time. Because as soon as we got the wool sheep, we started a business making our wool into So we started producing wool products from our flock, and then we started taking them to fiber festivals, with the idea that maybe we'd see if, you know, natural wool products from heritage breed sheep might be something that other people were interested in too. And I ended up, my first show was Shenandoah Valley Fiber Festival in Winchester, Virginia. And that is where I met Heather Bruner.
Because it was also my first show, and I'm pretty sure we were both kind of scared to death.
We were scared to death.
And we kept looking at each other going, are we doing this? Is this a good idea? And in between displays collapsing, it seemed like a good idea. And so here we are 2 years later. This will be our third year at the Shenandoah Valley Fiber Festival in September.
And it has grown right along with our business. So we are now very grateful for Shenandoah Fiber Festival and look forward to doing it again in September. So that's kind of where we came from. That's kind of who we are.
And when you talk about natural fiber, you mean all of your wool is natural colors, not just straight wool.
Right. All of our wool is naturally colored. The color it is on the skein is the color it was on the animal, which is weird. And all of our stuff is 100% wool, 100% natural. We don't blend it with anything. We don't, we minimally process it. It's just good wool. We try not to, it's unfold around with, as, you know, the other commercial would say. But, enough about my wool. I love, love, love Heather's. She's an amazing dyer. She has a great sense of color. And,
it's pretty much the opposite of what yours is.
Yeah, which is why we're such a great team, because we're just totally not competing with each other at all. Because if, you know, if people are looking for indie-dyed, colorful gorgeousness, and, you know, silk and wool and all sorts of luxury fibers, then there's Heather. And if you want 100% natural color, then you have me.
Which is harder to find. A lot of us dye beautiful multicolored yarns, but not everybody has the natural colors, which is a nice change.
Yep. Well, we just got to be friends and decided that we would do a podcast because why not? Seemed like a good thing to do at the time.
And so next on the list, now that you've met us, is what crafts do we do? Because we're fairly crafty individuals.
You're craftier than I am. Well, I've only been spinning and knitting not quite 2 years yet, because when we did our first show, people were asking us questions, and my poor husband, Scooter Pie, he would just look at me, and I would look at him, and they asked how our wool was prepared, and I'm like, yeah, it's...
at the mill, off the sheep.
it's sheared, and then it's washed, and then I don't know, and... you know, they said, oh, is this worsted or woolen spun? And I'm like, yes.
But you've
what would you
lot.
Like it to be?
You've learned a lot since then.
Yeah, so after that show, we looked at each other, and Scott said, babe, I think we're going to need a little bit of what I'd like to call some continuing education. So he sent me off to knitting class, and I thought, oh, well, I can totally do this. People have been doing this with sticks and string for thousands of years, and certainly with far less education than I have, so why should I be afraid of this? And I had a really wonderful teacher at a little shop called Knit One in Pittsburgh who told me, you can totally do this because there's only 2 stitches, and if you can learn 2 stitches, you can do any pattern you want to do. And I thought, oh, okay. So that kind of got me into that, and then people were asking about a roving, and I thought, oh, crap, now I've got to learn how to spin. So I've kind of, that's a rabbit hole I fell down head first. I've got now 3 different wheels and a drop spindle that I can't use. And
you're going to learn to use the drop spindle.
You keep telling me you're going to teach me, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, that involves us being in the same state.
Oh, yes, I guess we should mention that I'm from Pennsylvania and you're from North Carolina, so it's not going to be a video podcast.
Well, I suppose it could be, but, you know, that's just really way too much effort to get that beautiful every week.
Yeah, well, until I have a few less chins, that's not happening.
Details.
Yeah, so... then I learned to spin, and I've been doing that about a year and a half, and I've made the mistake, or wonderful coincidence, of joining the local guild. So now I have a tabletop loom and a floor loom, and people keep calling me. It seems like looms are now finding me, which I was told if I learned to weave that looms would find me. And the sad thing is, I've not woven yet, but they're finding me anyways, so...
I like to weave. I have a floor loom and a rigid heddle loom, and I weave when I have the time. There's only so many hours in the day. Between the time it takes to dye, to prep your fiber, to teach piano lessons, take care of Schubert and Gershwin and my husband, you know.
Wayner, who is a barbecue judge and one of the coolest human beings I've ever met, I just really dig Wayne.
Because not everybody is a certified barbecue judge. That's not his full-time job, but that he enjoys his hobby.
Yep, so we all have really weird... I should mention, Scooter Pie is a professional photographer, and he does beautiful, beautiful art photography.
Yes, he does.
But, anywho, yeah, so I came at this kind of backwards. I had sheep and wool, and then learned to do it, and you learned to do it, and then started diving in deeper.
Yeah.
But I was a competitive, I don't even know if you know that, I was a competitive quilter.
Yeah, I knew that.
When I was in my 20s, and I quit cold turkey because it had taken over my life.
And, well, I only got hobbies after I got out of graduate school I have a master's degree in piano pedagogy, which is teaching piano and training piano teachers, which involves a lot of time sitting at the piano practicing to get ready for recitals and that kind of thing. So I never even had a hobby other than maybe reading until I finished school. So that was probably a good thing, or I couldn't do both. Well, so what is your favorite part of being a transient wool merchant? What does that mean?
Eating.
What is a transient wool merchant?
Well, we should tell them how we came up with the name transient wool merchants. When we travel from state to state selling at fiber festivals, we're required to register with the individual states for sales tax purposes. And I can't even remember now which state it was that I registered in. And in each one, you have to declare, like, what you do, whether you have, like, rental cars or whether you're selling food or whatever. And the box I had to check was transient wool merchant. And I thought, okay, there's my new title. I'm a transient wool merchant. Because everybody asks us what we do, and, well, we're farmers, but farmer doesn't quite get it, because we're on the road 15 shows out of the year, so we do a whole lot more than just farming. So transient wool merchant kind of stuck, but...
And then you drug me along kicking and screaming to this podcast thing.
Right, because
sure
nobody wants to listen to me talk for an hour, but I could totally do that. But... my favorite thing about it is meeting people and eating.
That sounds like a good plan. Holy cow, and your dog just ran off with my yarn. Okay, back on subject there. About eating while we're on the road.
This is why her name is actually Stinkerbell.
Hello, Stinkerbell.
She will
steal the sock yarn back.
Good job. Steal mommy some more yarn. Good job. So, yeah, so when we're on the road... we vend during the day, and then in the evenings, we go and sample the local cuisine and try to find an interesting place to eat and drag some of our other vendor friends along with us, because...
Eating alone is no fun.
Well, eating alone is no fun, and we're all in the same boat. We're all far from home, and, you know, a lot of us don't even have our husbands along. I'm very lucky to have my Scooter Pie... run loose with me, but I know your Wayne is...
He's usually holding down the fort with the dogs at home, although that's going to change. We just bought our first camper. We have a travel trailer now.
So now you really are transient
wool
merchants.
Now we really are transient wool merchants, and we'll be traveling together more now that we can take the dogs with us, because my dog sitter moved away.
So... being a transient wool merchant involves meeting a ton of new people and eating a lot of great food and experiencing...
different states and climates, and how many different things can nature throw at you in one weekend?
Oh, yeah, like, you know, when your pop-up wants to pop up and take off and end up on the interstate. That was Maryland.
Yeah. Or when you go to South, which is in Asheville in the fall, and the year before was like 105 in the shade, and then the next year it's 32 in the morning, and you consider freezing to death.
Well, and don't forget South this year, when the inside of the roof froze, and then all day it was raining on our booths, and you got into South like 20 minutes till midnight the night before, and had to run home and produce and run back. Thank God you were like an hour away.
So these are all things you'll get to hear about as we get back into these shows in the fall.
There's always something. It's super fun and
never easy.
Never easy, but always interesting and a very good time. But yeah, like last year we got into Finger Lakes on Friday of setup and had like a 9-hour drive to get there and set up before the show started. But, you know, the yarn harlot was speaking. There was no way I was staying home. And, you know, getting into... Oh, and the bet we made at SAF last year that if I got into Maryland this year, that you would come and work the booth. And
she called me while I was at Disney World and said, "You're going to Maryland." I thought, wait, don't usually people win things and say, "Wait, I'm going to Disney World." I was at Disney World, and then I was going to Maryland. So, yeah, it's always...
Probably should mention that we're hardcore Disney junkies.
Yeah, well,
that's kind of part of the DNA here. We have to be at Disney World like
several times a year.
Yeah, practically quarterly. But
maybe we'll have us a podcast from Disney.
It's weird, but it's fun, and we hope you'll join us on the ride.
Since we're actually winding yarn as we speak. What are we working on? What's going on here? Both of us have yarn around our knees since we're in Amy's travel trailer, trying to wind yarn so we can knit later tonight.
And we're trying to pay attention to what we're talking about, so we're not trying to knit right now because, well, that would end badly.
For everybody.
And, you know, I'm still a fairly new knitter, so I get easily distracted, and my favorite word is tink. Not you, dear. It's also my dog's name, so...
So what are we actually working on? What projects do you have in the works?
I am still trying to catch up in my Laura Nelkin M Club. I joined the Laura Nelkin M Club because I'm a huge fan of Laura Nelkin. I love her designs, and I had every intention of keeping up and being right there with her, waiting on the clues to release, but what I didn't really get into, what it didn't occur to me that, like, the first project starts in lambing season, and the second project is in lambing season, and hello, by the time the third project releases, I'm probably going to be doing hay, so, not a grand idea, but I'm really enjoying keeping up. I have a great deal of bead knitting anxiety, if you want to call it that. I'm terrified that I'm going to screw this up royally, and so I spend a lot more time staring at it than I actually do knitting it, and I have to say, like, Heather has been a huge cheerleader over the last 2 years saying, "Oh, God, it's just strings and sticks. Just do it already."
If it's just yarn. You know, if you mess it up, pull it out. If you tangle it up like I have right now and I've got a royal mess, just keep working.
Don't even look over here because it's just ugly.
I was safe through two skeins and the third skein is not the charm.
Well, right now I'm rolling balls of Space Cadet mini skeins. My friend Stephanie's Space Cadet, and I got addicted to her mini skein club. And so now my next project on the needles is a bunch of Laura Nelkin jewelry. I guess you'd call it. Would that be what you call it? It's like accessories. It's cuffs and necklaces and collars and such. It's supposed to be made from scraps, but since I really don't have any scraps because I really don't have a ton of stash and I have a habit of running out of yarn before I'm done with the pattern, it seemed like a great use for my mini skeins, other than just, you know, sitting and staring at them. So I'm now wrapping world's tiniest balls of yarn to start making accessories. But I just finished the Kirsten Kapoor Through the Loops Mystery Knit Along shawl this year, which I did with Fiber Optics, Footnotes Gradient Paint Box. Is that what it's called?
I think it's called a paint box.
It's called paint a paint box.
Gradient, maybe.
Yeah, but it's on her Footnotes base. I really, really loved it, but believe me, when the pattern says it takes 500 yards and your paint box is 450 yards, believe me, you need 500 yards, and 450 is not going to get it. So I was kind of proud of myself because I just managed to, thank God I had bought the fiber in the same Wild Thyme colorway that I bought the paint box in, because I actually had to spin 50 yards of fingering weight to match the yarn that I had purchased, because I got through the middle of clue 4 of the 5 clues of that mystery knit along, and I was out of yarn. So, yeah, I tried to find some on D-Stash and couldn't find it. And as usual, Heather said, "Oh crap, you've got the fiber, just spin it." And she held my hand through that one, and I did. I spun it.
And it's gorgeous, and you cannot tell where one starts and the other one stops.
So I guess maybe I can actually spin. But I'm getting ready to head off to SSK next weekend, the Super Summer Knit Together in Nashville, for Leslie and Laura's retreat, and I'm going to be taking 2 classes with Laura Nelkin on knitting with beads, and 1 class with Amy Herzog, Fit to Flatter.
Yep.
Which we've been sitting here laughing at me because I've never knit a sweater, but I'm taking a class on how to make it fit me properly when I do get up my nerve, and I'm sure as soon as I get. As soon as we get done podcasting, Heather's going to beat me and tell me to cast something on and stop being such...
Stop being such a wimp. It's just yarn and string. You can follow the instructions. And as I say that, I'm finishing up the Grand Army Plaza shawl from Metropolitan Knits for almost the second time. Last summer, we were in Bozeman, Montana, and I thought it would be a fabulous idea to sit on the porch and stare at the mountains and knit this beautiful shawl out of lace weight. I'm using Madeline Tosh lace, and I got about 3/4 of the way through the shawl and decided I had stared at the mountains too much and really had more mistakes than I could tolerate. So I made my husband rip the whole thing out for me because I couldn't bear to do it myself. And then it went into timeout, and then I thought, you know what, before we go back to Bozeman this year, I'm going to knit that darn shawl again. So I got the book back out. Got the yarn back out. And you know what? It went pretty seamlessly this time. It had one little boo-boo in it. We'll call it a design feature. But it's almost done. I'm down to the... it's a knitted cast-off edge, which if you've never done that before, you cast on between 10 and 20 stitches normally and knit back and forth, casting off one stitch along your long edge as you go. It takes an extremely long time to do a knitted cast-off edge.
This all sounds thoroughly psychotic to me. But
it's not psychotic. It's not one of those things that translates to speech very well. But it's almost done. I probably have 200 stitches, which means 400 rows of knitting still.
Oh, Lord.
But they're only about 10-stitch rows, so it doesn't take too long. And this skein of yarn that I'm untangling right now is really, really a big mess. So who knows if I'll ever get started on a project with it. But that's what I'm finishing. I always have socks on the go because socks are my favorite project.
Yes, she knits socks in line at Disney.
Hey, if you can knit a whole sock in line at Disney World and only knit one sock in a week, the lines were short. So, let's kind of wrap this up since it was our first podcast and I may have to go throw up now.
we both have serious anxiety issues, so we're trying to pretend that this is not happening and we're not talking to anybody but each other. So, you know, hey, if you have severe anxiety issues like we do, God bless you, because this is scary.
So if we sound really nervous, like we're going to cry, maybe it'll be better next time.
Next time we'll have the picture of margaritas, and then it'll go very smooth.
Okay, there we go. So mentioning next time, what kinds of things are we going to be talking about on this podcast on a regular basis?
Well, we're going to be talking about our knitting, of course. Our next show, the show we just did, traveling, stupid people on the interstate, and wonderful food. I just have to say that dinner last night at El Centro in Winchester was quite possibly the best Mexican I've ever had in my life.
It was fabulous Mexican, and it's a local place as far as I know. It's not a chain. All the food was very fresh. I would highly recommend it.
Yep.
Husbands enjoyed the food as well, so it wasn't like a frou-frou, foofy girl kind of place. It was good, solid Mexican food.
And all I can think of right now is that pork butt your husband has in the smoker. I just have to say that. That's pretty much what's getting me through this ball of yarn, is dreaming of the pork butt.
Have a grill, have smoker, will travel. So that's...
And traveling with Big Wayner, the professional barbecue judge, it has its advantages.
That it does.
It has its advantages.
That it does. Schubert and Gershwin are hanging out in our camper, and then we'll all get together for dinner and doggy snacks, I suppose. It's a small herd. And I guess that's it for today.
Yes.
Hit the list. Where did we come from? Why did we start our businesses? What crafts do we do?
Sheer stupidity. Crazy pants.
What are we working on and what are we going to do? So thank you for listening to us ramble on today. And hopefully we'll be
We hope to do this weekly. Time. We hope to do this weekly. If the show schedule and going to Montana and everything else.
Stars
will...
align. Your dog is about to gnaw a hole in my yarn, I think.
She's a peek-a-poo. Her jaws really don't align like that. Have you seen her underbite? There's no gnawing. She'll be fine. All right. Well, until we see you again, we'll see you again.
Transient wool merchants.
Peace out.